Cha-ching. That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
The Lindsay Clancy murder trial is 3 weeks into testimony at Plymouth Superior Court. The prosecution has called more than 60 witnesses. The problem is that some of the most damaging testimony the jury has heard actually came from the Commonwealth, from the actual DA themselves, from the prosecution. Don't ask me why, but it seems to be how things are playing out. Someone who has now been in the courtroom for this last week to give us a perspective on everything we've been discussing here in a way that only Bob can. And not just because he's Bob, but because he's been in the actual room. And when you're in the room, it's a little different than just being there with cameras. Bob Mata of Defense Diaries with myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agency for the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. All right, let's dive into it because Bob's got to get on a boat because he's going to Cheers for lunch.
They always know your name
as well.
They're always glad you came.
They do. They do. So the prosecution called 5 mental health professionals this week. Lindsay's psychiatrist, 2 psychiatric nurse practitioners, a counselor. Every one of them described a woman begging for help, switching medications, losing sleep for days. So all the people like, I'm waiting to hear the evidence from the medical professionals. Well, there you fucking go. It's been there all week. I can't help if you're not absorbing it. All Commonwealth witnesses. So who is actually building the insanity defense here? Because it feels like the Commonwealth is doing pretty good at building the defense. They're saying she didn't have. Bob, what was it like in there?
Well, I mean, if I'm going to work backwards, yesterday when they decided to sandwich the autopsies in the beginning of the case and then stick an autopsy or two towards the end of their case.
Yeah.
And you get the intended result from the Commonwealth, which is Lindsay Clancy just evaporating into a puddle, inconsolable, can't control her side. I'm sitting 10 feet away from her.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in the same row across the aisle where the media sits that her parents are sitting, and they're sobbing. And if I'm to work my way back from that, it's like you said, there's just nothing like sitting in the courtroom, you know, and it's interesting to be an observer as opposed to being on the other side of the bar and arguing the case. But man, as far as the Commonwealth's case, I can't agree with you more, T. I mean, you're hearing the story from the Commonwealth's witnesses. They're asking flat out. Reddington asked Tufts flat out. She wasn't doctor shopping. No, she wasn't. She wasn't pill seeking. No, she was. This is coming from their witnesses, mm-hmm. based on their evaluations, yeah. as shitty as they were, you know, but what became clear to me is how she ended up with these four different healthcare providers.
Yeah.
You know, it made sense when we learned that she was going to Tufts, and then she's like, you know what? I don't know that she's really doing much for me. I'm gonna go over to this other facility at the behest of her mother-in-law,
yeah.
Patrick's mother, who's a labor and delivery nurse, who obviously had a relationship with NP, nurse practitioner Julie Paul, yeah. who was fabulous.
Could have saved
I mean,
the day.
I realize she's named in the complaint, but my estimation of her as a witness is that had she been able to remain on,
yeah,
we would not be here right now.
So yeah. evident. That was so, so clearly evident because you saw, you know, especially coming in after Tufts, you saw the depth of field difference between apples and oranges. I mean, it wasn't even a fruit group. It was like going from apples to tomatoes or something. It was so vastly different between those. The vesting that she had as a nurse practitioner, a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and coming from labor and delivery, with taking a text on the weekend, taking a phone call on the weekend. And granted, you know, I know a lot of people think you need to have this work-life balance, but there's professions and there's jobs, and she took this as a profession. She was all in when you have someone in crisis like that, all her years of reps, you know, and then they had a consulting group there as well. You know, Tufts didn't consult on this with anyone. It was just startling. So, Bob, we're seeing the effect. I'm watching. I was looking for you all week in the audience there. What I know what we're feeling at home, which is traumatic. We're seeing her fall apart. We're seeing the redirects that people are doing onto Patrick. And I think just because of his affect was different, and also because people are believing it couldn't possibly be her. Look at her. It couldn't possibly. So they got to pin it somewhere else. That's the effect coming through the camera. What's the jury doing? What do you feel in that courtroom from the jury? How are they seeing this, you think?
So in the debacle day, which was not yesterday, but the day prior, I mean, the jury was obviously feeling it. There was one juror in particular, and I've seen, like, my wife is like, you have to be telling the people what the jury's doing. And I'm like, well, honey, you know as well as I do that I can't read minds, and neither can you, and I've never met a lawyer that can. What are they thinking? I have no idea. If, you know, I give body language the weight that it deserves, which is very little.
Part of the whole.
Right. You know, right. It's part of the collective. Are there things that people do that obviously are indicative of a feeling? Obviously. So I'm not dismissing that. But, you know, thinking that you've cracked a case and you've figured somebody out based on the body language, I just don't subscribe to that.
Yeah.
I'm not besmirching anybody that believes that stuff. But, you know, good on you. But there was a woman in the second row, because what I was looking at, a lot of jurors were stealing glances at Lindsay during the breakdowns. All right, so almost the entire first row, there's two younger, I'd say the two youngest jurors, female, in that first row. You know, they would steal a 3 to 5 second glance at her as she's breaking down. There was a woman, I would say, over 50, back row, who was just staring, watching Lindsay the entire time. And you know, in dabbing her eyes. Now, what she's dabbing her eyes for could be a multitude of things. Obviously, you know, it could be that she's feeling empathy for Lindsay, as I do. I put a tweet out contemporaneous to that moment going on, where I said I desperately wish I could give Lindsay Clancy a hug.
Yeah, uh-huh. saw the response to that too.
Yeah, you saw the response to that. I'm here for it. I'm here for it, because if it gets the mental health conversation going, yes. I'm here.
God damn it, Bob. You have empathy for people. How dare you?
And there I think the win has already occurred. I was talking to Todd and Tony before you got on, Bob. You know, this has been such an attention draw for so many reasons, and there is no justice for these children. She's right. going to be behind bars, either locked to a bed or in general pop for the rest of her life. She just yep. wants to die. And we all agree with the fact that she killed her kids. It looks as if she premeditated it. The only argument is, was she psychotic during the premeditation or not? And that's what these experts, especially on defense, are going to say and claim. And when you look at those, when you look at her behavior in the courtroom, when you look at the testimony of anyone, the only thing that could justify someone who had a life arc of hers for that is a psychotic break. I've never even seen one this profound. And so we're not even arguing on any of the facts. It just comes down to, will the jury believe she's psychotic or not? Was she in that state? Which is completely, as we're going to find when Reddington hits it on Monday, completely within exactly what the definition of all this is.
I feel like people don't understand what psychotic means. I mean, I saw it right there in the comments. Not one person, not one has said she was psychotic. Not one. Okay, we say that five more times and maybe you'll feel better about yourself. But here's how this works. In the treatment, in the times that they were visiting her prior to this, she was not in a psychotic state. She just wasn't there yet. Okay, there's the answer to your question. That's why they didn't say she was in a psychotic state at that moment in time. Like, she felt, this is something, it goes in and out. It can happen for a burst and be done. They're not going to know 3 to 4 weeks in advance that she's in a psychotic state. There's a difference, and this is what Siobhan always talks about. There's a difference between someone who is a psychopath and psychosis. Two very different things. It's about as stupid as saying, well, they didn't treat that burn victim for burn injuries when they went in for the checkup 5 weeks earlier. Well, they didn't they weren't in the house that burned down yet. But why did they treat them for burns? Because they weren't yet a burn victim. That's how that works.
And it was established that she was in, there was elements of mania coming in here. And as Siobhan described it, mania is a stepping stone to the psychosis. I mean, but that, again, we're going to find out on Monday. Hey, we'll see what the experts say on Monday when defense has their turn, or if he hits it on Tuesday. But
18 people is a lot of people to get onto the same page of this. Yep. I mean, Bob, I know, you know, body language is only one thing. You've been in a lot of courtrooms, though. You've seen a lot of people try to sell a line of bullshit to a jury. Yep. And you know it's a line of bullshit. And some really try hard. Some are just defiant and assholes like Corey Richens. Obviously, this is its own monster over here of what we're dealing with. When you compare it to that, when you compare it to rooms where you've seen people really try to get one over on somebody or present in a way that they really want them to believe something. I don't think Lindsay Clancy gives a shit what anybody thinks of her by her reactions. Is that coming across? I mean, where do you feel the jury, or how do you feel the jury is receiving her outbursts, for lack of a better term? And I mean, I'd be outbursting too, I mean, in a situation like this. How do you think it's being received when they're shutting down court, when they're taking breaks because of it? Are they feeling empathetic? Are they feeling emotionally moved by what is going on here? And I guess it can be moved in either direction, but what's been the observation?
Yeah, you'd have to be emotionally dead not to have feelings, and like you said, what those feelings are depend on the mindset of that person.
Yeah,
but it's impossible not to feel it in that courtroom. I mean, it's like I always say that trials are fascinating to people because we're watching the human condition in its worst possible light, and we find it fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, and we're sitting here watching this in real time with an understanding from my perspective that this woman was failed by everybody that she came in contact with in the healthcare system. And she realizes, she knows what she did. Like, I mean, are people under the misconception that Lindsay Clancy did not become aware of the fact that she killed her own children, the people that she loved more than anybody in the world? And that's right. Like, I need that to resonate with people. I need people to understand that. She loved those three children more than any other human being on the planet. And she did this to them. Mm-hmm. And if you don't think that she knows that, she knew it immediately. Like, she's been knowing it for years. Yeah. This is her... Her hell, the hellscape that is her mind, is worse than any prison cell that exists on the planet.
Yeah.
Where she's living at second to second, every day of her life is an absolute hell that I would not wish upon my worst enemy. And so what you're seeing with this jury is it is impactful. How it's going to impact that particular jury is an individual by individual thing, because as you're seeing online, when I posted the desperately wish I could give her a hug, you know, all the torch and pitchfork, all the I don't give a shit, eye for an eye people, I don't care if she was psychotic. I mean, there is a portion of the population that in this circumstance, when a mother kills her own children, is unwilling to give them a pass no matter what the reason is. You did the act. And throwing you in jail, and we're throwing away the key.
And it's not a pass. It's not a pass. She's not getting out of jail. That's the thing that's getting me. It's just not a pass.
What gets me is it's so much greater than this case. Nobody's trying to give Lindsay Clancy a pass. She can go away forever. I'm cool with that. But I think she's cool with that, too. It's about understanding this and recognizing this so it can be caught, can it be seen earlier? And this is one of those cases where I don't know that you really could get much. I mean, there's certainly other ways that you could have helped Lindsay Clancy, and we probably wouldn't be in this space. But psychosis, when in a condition like this, the way it did, it kicked in. Whatever triggered it, and what happened is what happened, which can very scarily happen to almost anybody if they're in the right sort of state. And I think that scares a lot of people, and they're afraid to really go down that road and understand that. But the reason for this conversation, the reason that this is a big case and people are talking about it, is to prevent the next one. Is to put the medical establishment on notice, to shine a light going, look at all these ways that you failed this woman, or that we could at least do things differently. If we're not going to go down the road that they failed her, that the way your system is working as directed, which is really kind of, there's not a lot in this that went really off the rails. It's just the rails are so loose and wide that it allows for this sort of a horrific way of helping someone. And we need to fix it, because this is just one case that we're hearing about. There are far more where other horrible things happen and it doesn't get a national stage for attention. This is not necessarily a huge one-off here. This is a broken system that people are living in and suffering in every single damn day. And when you see that list of the medications, I saw one of the tweets this morning about it. And this is, look at that. I mean, look at, these are the meds that she was prescribed over the course of 30 days. I mean, or three months. Any of those numbers would be insane. Well, she didn't take all of them. She took a lot of them. She took damn near almost all of them on and off. And when you're mixing these things on and off at these different levels that you get, I'm surprised she didn't do worse shit. I'm surprised she wasn't in a grocery store blowing everyone away when you're on that level of meds.
It was in her system. You know, the medical examiner tested blood. Those things, they were in the system. She was taking them.
The Commonwealth sitting there trying to put out there that she took enough of everything to know how it was making her feel.
Yeah.
Period, end of conversation. I don't give a fuck what people say about that. We like every single prescription medication, individuals react differently to it, period. Yeah. End of conversation. There is not a baseline where everybody acts the same on this particular. Our minds are all built differently. Our biology is different, but like synaptically speaking, how it's going to affect one individual. My father, day one, after they prescribed him Seroquel to help him sleep, came up the next morning and he's like, I felt like I was crazy. This is after one night, first night taking Seroquel. I couldn't tell if I was in reality. I couldn't tell if I was sleeping or if I was awake. He's like, that shit should be banned. It needs to be off the market. And you know, when you, the thing about all these scripts and throwing the polypharmaceutal cocktail at her is that none of these fucking doctors and nurses were going back to see any of the medical records from anybody that she was seeing prior to. Can you ask your patient for information and rely on that? Yes, to a certain extent. To a certain extent. You can't take it as gospel. If you have somebody that is suffering from mental illness, it is imperative. And this is proof of it.
Yeah.
That you need to do the work. You need to go back, get the medical records. You get a waiver. You get a HIPAA form that's signed by Lindsay, and she says, of course you can go get all my records. And typically in this day and age, you do it electronically. This isn't like everything that exists with this case is so confounding. And what it really is it's easy to point the finger at Tufts and say, oh, she was, you know, 30 days after coming board certified. She was a neophyte. Where were the people behind her?
Yeah.
The system is broken because when you have a young psychiatrist coming in and she unwittingly gets a very complicated case that's exacerbated by the fact that her patient is an R&D, labor and delivery nurse, who she might be thinking, oh, and who's very A-type. Like, Lindsay keeps very detailed journals. She's a fucking nurse. She's doing research. She's asking questions. She's saying, this makes me feel this way. This makes me feel this way. And so it's like when a lawyer, when a lawyer is representing another lawyer, it's a nightmare for a client because, you know, that lawyer is always going to have their own thoughts. Whereas with the normal client, your client is just accepting your advice at face value. When you have a lawyer that you're representing, it's a terrible relationship because that lawyer basically wants to try their own case, but they understand
exactly.
And it's the same shit that she was going through with Lindsay. Yeah. At some point, he's thinking Lindsay's just a pain in the ass. She's just throwing scripts at her. She's giving her some pamphlets about some groups that she can go and, you know, some therapy shit, group session. That's not therapy.
Yeah.
And when you have a situation where there's not some kind of red flag or triggering event for a facility to say, okay, if you put her on seven different things, you need to step up and ask somebody with a little more more experience, or we need to roundtable it and collectively try to figure out what's going on with this woman. Because when they misdiagnose her and miss the fact that she had that manic episode, and I'm talking about a manic episode, a woman running a 5K 4 days after they gave birth is fucking manic.
Yeah.
And you missed it. So when they give her the Zoloft right from the get, and it has this toxic effect on her immediately, it was because they didn't look at her records. They didn't understand that in her first bout, obviously much less with Dawson, but still she had some postpartum depression issues, and she was manic. They missed that. So combing in to Callan being born, and when it starts to hit, and then they just start throwing the shit at her, it's like that message she says, I can't remember if it was Gelada or Tufts, that she sent the message, and I think it was Gelada. It rocked me to my core, and it broke this case down in one sentence. And it was, I just feel like I'm not being heard.
Yes.
Yeah.
For me, I was ready to walk out of the courtroom and be like, you know what? I don't even think that
Redding
need to put a case on.
Bob, Siobhan hit this, our psychotherapist, on Wednesday when she's been following this and taking voracious notes on this. And she's been appalled at on the mental health side of this as well. And her, you talked about those red flags. She said there was a glaring red flag that she saw that no one was paying attention to, and they kept dismissing it, the lack of sleep. She said that lack of sleep that she kept reporting was throwing kerosene on all these things that are going on. That was what was actually one of the escalators for this, and they weren't addressing that well enough. And especially, like you said, when you have a nurse practitioner, so she's basically charging herself with her journals and everything she's doing. I think they gave. I think Tufts started out by giving her too much deference because Tufts wasn't being backed up. I mean, you threw her. What an institution just threw her to the wolves. Hey, go make us money. We're going to put your name on the board and claim you're an expert.
And the reality is,
this is the system working as it is currently laid out in its current confines, what the rules are. This is how it's allowed to operate. That's why we're talking about it, because 100%. It's broken. It goes so far beyond Lindsey Clancy. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Want to go to another area here. The prosecution is still presenting its case against Lindsey Clancy, but after 3 weeks in Plymouth Superior Court, the jury has watched a mother break down, heard her diary entries read aloud, and sat through autopsy testimony about three children. Criminal defense attorney Bob Mata and host of the podcast Defense Diaries is with us from Boston. He's been in the courtroom all week watching this. The prosecution is getting close to wrapping up. We know that. Reddington's going to have his chance to present his side of the case. He's been doing a fabulous job on cross so far, I think, of presenting it. But Bob, in your opinion, what does he still need to educate the jury on that maybe there's some holes that are missing? There's a lot of education, it feels, that needs to be done in this case. Just watching our comment section, watching people's reaction, there's either an understanding of this or almost a willingness to not understand this, almost an intention of not trying to understand this at a deeper level. I got to imagine there's some jurors in that box that may be in that same sort of mindset. Where does he need to go when the stage is his?
All right. So, Todd, do me a favor. 1125 Gorguruga. It's a mouthful.
It's also a new cheese. I'm having it on my salad this afternoon. It's delicious. Little nutty.
This comment perfectly encapsulates what the issue is for Kevin Reddington. Okay. Because I'm not making it's really not a disparagement. I'm not making any kind of character judgment on Gorg. She needs to be locked up for life, protect other kids, regardless of the factors which led to the triple murder. Now, you are not alone, Gorg. there are many, 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 many people out there that feel that exact. That is the challenge that Kevin Reddington is faced with. For the Gorgs that are on the jury who are coming into this with, I don't care what caused her to do it, she did it. Mm-hmm. And nothing that you're going to say to me, and nothing that an expert or some talking head that's going to be on the stand that's been paid by the defense is going to convince me that she doesn't need to be punished. Because this, and so it's the exact reason why lawyers call the insanity defense, and in Massachusetts they call it lack of criminal responsibility. It's the defense of last resort. And it's because we as Americans have an incredibly difficult time uttering those words, because people cannot focus on anything other than the act. Now, Gorg, if you were on the jury and you were to maintain your mindset, even though the Commonwealth doesn't meet their burden and they're not going to be able to, because what's going to happen is when the Commonwealth rests, I believe, on Monday, people are going to be like, well, where's the case? Well, that's not the case. The defense would have stipulated to all of that. There is no question, and I see the Patrick Clancy bullshit in the chat. That didn't happen. I'm telling you. Trust Lindsey's lawyer. Kevin Reddington's been doing it 50 years. The guy's a legend. Yeah. It's like watching Matlock in the courtroom, except a real life version of it. If you don't think that he thought about being able to point the finger at Patrick, you're out of your mind. Nothing slips by that guy. It doesn't exist in the world as a real thing. Yeah. His client did it. So that's what we have to contend with. And all the focus on the Patrick shit is taking the focus away from what needs to be happening on this trial, which is the mental health care system, the health care system, postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis. Postpartum depression is not even in the DMV or the DSM.
DSM.
DSM. You know, that's stunning to me. You know what I'm saying? So. Yeah. That challenge of being able to get people to understand that if somebody's lost control of their mind to the extent where they have no ability to talk themselves out of what's happening, because what's happening in their mind is their new reality. It's literally a different person within the vessel, which is the body. Intellectually, the mind has become something else. And to get people to the point where they're willing to say, all right, I understand what happened here, and I'm willing to apply the law, because that's where I was getting to, Gorg. It would be nullification. You'd be refusing to follow the law. So if the Commonwealth doesn't meet their burden by proving that she's not psychotic, and you're saying, I don't give a shit, I'm convicting her because of what she did, and I don't care what the circumstances are, that is in effect jury nullification, wherein it's usually for the defendant, in the defendant's favor, like in a case like Aaron Spencer. Like, you know, he's protecting his 13-year-old daughter. He puts down a 67-year-old monster who's been abusing her and grooming her. And does it again after he gets out of jail and he's got her, whatever, all that whole situation. And he goes and puts him down. If the state would have met their burden, and the entire jury's like, I am not convicting that man who saved his daughter, even though the law required him to do it. That's called jury nullification. It's where you're refusing to apply the law. And that's the problem with this case. That is Kevin Reddington's biggest hurdle, is getting people to actually buy into the law that has been written by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and it exists for a reason in terms of lack of criminal responsibility, to get people to say, all right, as much as I don't want to, I'm going to apply the damn law.
And she's not walking. And that's what people can't get over. She is, no matter what, she's not walking away from this free if she's found innocent of not being criminally responsible for it. She will be, I mean, if not forever for life, she's going to be at a state psychotic institution, you know, psychiatric institution for life. There's no getting away.
It really feels to me, and it's kind of an observation I've made in a bit of a judgment as well, the same group of folks who seem to have a willingness to not understand this, like going out of their way to not critically think about it because it's icky and it's uncomfortable, are the same group that would be going to their Alzheimer patient grandmother or parent and going, why don't you remember? Come on, you're being so forgetful. And that exists. I've seen it. Where it's like, they have Alzheimer's. They have dementia.
We talked about this three weeks ago. This exact thing.
And it's like, and the sad thing is, there's a lot of people that still operate in that world. And then they're shocked when grandma or mom or dad is not operating like they were 30, 40 years ago. Their brain is damaged. Their brain is broken. It's a different type of broken than this psychosis, but it's in kind of that sort of family, if you will, where the vessel is there, they are not. And it's an easier way to help understand it. And I was trying to think of ways of making an analogy to help understand it. But then I thought, well, these are the same folks who would do that sort of shit to their ailing grandparents or parents who are thinking this sort of way. I don't know why this is such a hard hurdle for people to grasp and understand. It's uncomfortable. It's sad, without a doubt.
And no one's saying go free. No one is saying she's going free or wants to go free. Yeah. She can't.
Throw up Annette Braben's comment 11:27. I know that the CW are trying to prove. No, the next 11:27 a.m. The one I know that the CW are trying to prove she wasn't in psychosis. That one. You see it? I'll read. Yeah, that one. All right. So after Tony's impassioned plea about in our last segment, which I think Annette was in here, that's what Kevin Reddington's dealing with, man. Like when Tony was trying to explain in our last segment, which everybody should go back and watch, that the providers that are getting on the stand saying that she wasn't showing any of the symptoms of psychosis is because she wasn't in psychosis yet.
Yeah.
It wasn't until after that. So that's not where they're proving it anyway, Annette. So you have to wait for the defense to come on. Their experts are going to explain to the world. Hopefully people are listening. what psychosis actually is, that you can actually, it waxes and wanes. You can you can have periods of lucidity. You can operate a phone. You can have
Just Google it.
Right. I mean, you can make plans.
Yeah.
All these things can happen while you're in psychosis.
She's a witch.
I mean, that's what it is.
It's essentially people are calling her a witch without calling her a witch. It's
like, ironically, I'm in the bastion of, you know, I'm stone's throw from Salem.
Yeah.
You know, it's where it all happened.
There's the weekend plans, Bob. Go visit Salem.
And
take
this
some pictures with
also,
the witches.
This isn't, I mean, if you followed our show for the last 4 years, we've never, ever said this fit. So this is a blurb for us as well. I've never seen a case like this. I mean, Bob's seen many more, obviously. But, I mean, this is the first time we're saying we have a massive incongruence. It must be a different explanation. And all these crazy nutters. And that's another point of this is, everyone has mental health issues that does horrendous things to human beings. All of them. But none of them we've ever covered is a psychotic break. You know, even the Nick Reiner, he ain't going to reach that bar. It wasn't. That's a life pattern of broken brain. This is a wholly different matter.
But I know you got to run, Bob, here quickly before you run. And I want to ask you this. And we're not quite here yet, but I'm curious to get your take on it. We're going to get to this to the jury in a matter of weeks, maybe by the end of next. Do you think we're going to get to a verdict, though?
No.
That's not a hung jury.
No. I think they'll try her again, and I don't think we'll get to it again. This is a case that people are so absolutely set in their ways. Their mindset is not going to be changed. The Annettes, the Gorgs, those folks, it doesn't matter what Reddington's going to put on. Because, again, there's the folks that are this one segment that are like, I don't care. Yeah, I'll admit she was psychotic. She was in psychosis. I'll give that to you. Tough shit.
Yeah.
She killed her kids. She's going in. That's it. Throw away the key. I don't care.
Yeah.
You'll have the other folks that are a little more torn, and then you'll have the folks on the opposite side that understand that mental illness is a real thing and that this woman didn't have control of her faculties and that it's the only reasonable explanation. When you look at who she was as a mother, there's no other explanation on the planet that exists other than she was in psychosis. If they had any kind of proof that Patrick Clancy was having an affair with another woman and Lindsay found out and this was her fucking response, it would have been exhibit 1A.
Yeah.
And it would have been their entire opening. This woman snapped when she found out that her husband was having an affair. It doesn't exist in evidence. So the only explanation that is at all reasonable in terms of trying to figure out what happened here is the woman was in psychosis. That woman who loved those kids the way that she did, and when you hear her journal entries, you know this is a woman who was invested in being a mother, who loved those kids with everything in her every fiber of her being. And to do this, something had gone horribly wrong in her mind. And that's it. And we're never going to – I'll be shocked if we get a verdict. Let me put it that way.
I'd be shocked – if we make it to a second trial, not because the Commonwealth isn't going to retry her, because you know they will, I will be shocked if she's alive for it. If we get a hung jury here, I don't want her to be retried. I'd be shocked if she doesn't find her own exit, take an exit ramp at some point. Honestly,
Reddington was very honest about it before the trial started. You know, he said it. It's like, look, she's still suicidal.
Yeah. I don't know how you wouldn't be for the rest of your
existence. There's never going to be a day, in her entirety of her life that she doesn't want to not be here anymore.
Yeah. And I
got to roll. Yeah. All right, you guys.
Enjoy Boston. Say hi to Frazier for us.
I love you,
Bob. Good job, Bob. Thanks, Bob.
All right. See you guys.
All right. We'll continue our conversation here for another 20 or so minutes. We'll talk about what's going on with the case and the Patrick end of things, because that still seems to be a road that a lot of folks like to travel down. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube on that. Links are in the description. While the Lindsay Clancy trial plays out in Plymouth Superior Court, a different trial is happening on TikTok. The theory is that Patrick Clancy, the father of those three children, is the one who actually killed them. Yesterday, we talked to attorney Eric Faddis about how he could legally go after the folks who are pushing this theory, and I encourage him to. I hope to God he puts some people out of homes, out of lives, out of existence for pushing this one. That's the vengefulness I have in my heart when you're going after someone who is a victim of the absolute unimaginable. And the fact that he went and 3 years later remarried. Woo, 3 years later, he remarried. That's too quick for some people. Some people, it's just fine. I'm sorry he didn't consult TikTok before and go, hey, guys, you know what? I went through hell. I found someone who loves me and supports me and cares about me. But Susan in Ohio, do you think it's too quick? Is this going to make you uncomfortable that I get married? Should he have done that, Susan in Ohio? Should he have checked in with you first? That's the level of absurdity that I'm seeing here. Robin, when you look at these comments and from a human behavior side of things, I mean, it just makes me want to scream. But what the hell is going through people's mind that, number one, they feel that their own inter-dialogue and they're feeling that they should be the ones that are granting permission of what's okay and not okay to someone getting remarried 3 years after a horrific tragedy, that somehow their opinion matters. That, I guess, I don't know. We do this for a living and we express our opinions. I don't think my opinion matters about much of anything. I'm just throwing it out there. But why the fuck do people think they can take that vitriol, that weirdness, that darkness, and assign it to someone who they've never met and an experience that they'll probably never experience, and dictate to them how they should live their lives and what's appropriate and not?
So we can take the case aside and take a look at this, because I think they're two separate things, because you brought up a really good point about the laws of human nature and how we as human beings interact with the world around us. And so let's look at it from genetics, evolution, and biology about us as a species. Whether you look at Robert Greene's book, Laws of Human Nature, you read books like Robert Cialdini's book, Influence, what happened is human beings are born with this incessant need to correct others. And what happens is we want to prove our worth and value to the world around us, because when we prove our worth and value, they'll accept us as part of the tribe and we're survivors, and then we'll pass on our genetic coding. Literally, that's the reason why that happens. We ebb and flow the dichotomy between self and others when these things happen. But when we hear or see or experience something that's incongruent with our own beliefs, our own self-impressions of ourselves, our own thoughts and ideas, we have this need to want to correct others to prove that we're right, you're wrong. And when we can suspend our egos, our vanities, and our own insecurities to actually open our ears and get curious about why someone has a different opinion of us, now we're going to enter the world of critical thinking. This is why us as a species, we are not great critical thinkers when we're emotionally hijacked and our prefrontal cortex is fully flooded with all the adrenaline, because we're filled with rage, retribution, all these emotions. And hence, when you give someone a platform like TikTok, Twitter, X, whatever it is, where there's no reciprocity directed against you, where you feel unsafe for saying things that are incongruent with someone else's thoughts, opinions, behaviors, you feel empowered to say stupid shit. And because there's no accountability for it. In other words, society up until probably the information age really took off in the last couple of years has put guardrails on our behavior, because we're accountable to things we say to others. We have to face them. We have to have a dialogue. We have to have the discussion. We have to be able to defend our points of view. We have to be curious about others. All these things we had as a society for our hundreds of thousands of years of evolution simply can't be erased in the last couple because of technology, because we can hide behind a screen. And so that's where this incessant need to correct and come up with stupid shit, because it doesn't agree with what we think the world should be from our own context. Because all this comes down to, at every human disagreement on this planet, is not about what is. You can't argue that the wind is blowing at 15 miles an hour across this parking lot where I'm at right now. That's just a fact of is. But what that interpretation of our context is, I can say that's a great breeze today, and someone next to me can say this is a horrendous wind we're having. And we keep loving to argue that context because no one talks about what is. And talking about what is and the cause and effect of that, that's where critical thinking happens. And that's not the world of TikTok, Twitter, and social media, because we just keep wanting to argue context and get away from facts, data, and law.
Have we always been in a state like this with society? We're just seeing it more now. That's what I kind of go back to a lot of times is when we talk about cases like this, or, you know, sometimes we see a lot of one-off cases that don't get the massive attention like something like this does. And you go, oh my God, the world is filled with madness and horrible people. But, I mean, go to the microfilm at a library. You know what that is? That's where you, for kids, you can go and you can look at old newspapers, and it's probably still on a film. That's how they would store them. Some of it is digitized now, and there probably will be more digitized, but go back and look at old headlines and newspapers from all over the country, and you'll see horrible behavior everywhere. This is not anything new. We're just able to pull it up a hell of a lot more readily than we used to. Are we doing are we the same thing as people, though? Has there always been, you know, Susie in Ohio who's going to have these insane thoughts about Patrick Clancy, or, you know, or whatever, insert person here, having very off-base thoughts about or refusal to understand mental health and just want to put a brick wall up and go, I don't care what happened. I don't care what the details are. She should burn.
Yes.
We've always had those. It's just now they all have microphones and now we're able to hear them all that much more readily, which then incesses everyone who hears those things like nails on a chalkboard and then inspires our anger.
Yeah. And we've always done this. This is how we evolved as a species. The thing that allowed us to move beyond the cave is our ability to storytell and gossip. You know, again, I've mentioned the book numerous times. Noah Havari's book, Sapiens, talks about how we evolved as a species to move beyond the cave and feel safe in our environment. And we did so by being able to be collected in more than tribe of 150, which is chimpanzees, where they get limited at, because we have the ability to storytell, weave a tale, and gossip. And we've always done this as a species. It's why we've evolved. It's how we problem solve. But where it's kept tamped down, I should say, is when you have opinions that get so far astray because of context and these arguing contexts, it's never had a place to root before. Because if you have a really belief system, understanding of what that is that is so divergent and different than the group around you in that tribe and society, you're a minority. A very small minority, maybe 1-2%, and that gets snuffed out because you're surrounded by a lot of other groupthink. In other words, there's no voice there's no echo chamber. It's just you by yourself or maybe one or two people, and then you have the larger tribe, the community, the town, the square, whatever it is. But now what's happened with the information age and our ability to do this, this is, matter of fact, we take it to world of terrorism. Terrorist cells exist in this same kind of microcosm, same kind of groupthink, because you had a mullah over in Pakistan or Afghanistan that teaches their thought process. It gets absorbed by this group. And then they would radicalize outside. They'd reach out to people and grab them in. This is how radicalization happened. And this is what we used to do right after 9/11. It's like, wow, they were radicalized. Who were they recruited by and everything? But then what happened, it took that next step. And this is what we're seeing so much more now. Self-radicalization. So say you have a thought or opinion that's different than what we're seeing in facts, data, and details and cases and people covering it on mainstream media and cable news networks or by really good journalistic investigators and all these things. But I have this, I'm feeling it right here. Now I'm going to go look up online to find my people, and I'm going to find them because they're all out there. And then you get self-radicalized into that group and it self-propagates. And then the algorithms inside these Nuttervilles, what do? They love it. And so it self-propagates. And so this 1-2%, maybe 5% of people that believe a certain thing, all of a sudden feel empowered because they think everyone thinks this way. Because what are the algorithms doing? Propagating that and keeping common sense away.
I feel like a lot of people don't even know what to be outraged by, and they're looking to the group to tell them where it's like, and that, I mean, with the Patrick Clancy, I do not understand this argument because there's a lot of misinformation that a lot of these conspiracy theorists are going down. I've heard so many. Well, he got married in 4 months. No, he didn't. It was 3 years, dipshit. And so we're talking a 3-year between the tragedy happening and him getting remarried. And even when you point that out, well, still, that's too quick. What's too quick about 3 years? I don't see a damn thing wrong with it. I don't even, it's not even like on the, like if he did get married in 4 months, I'd be like, yeah, it's a little quick, but you know, but again, at the end of the day, if he's able to find someone that it was supportive and loving and could help him work his way through this mentally and it turned romantic, more fucking power to the man. What do you want him to be, crying in the corner, dying every day? He could easily do that, and he could very easily not be alive for this trial. I don't know that I would have made it all the way to this trial had this happened to me. I don't think a lot of us would be, quite honestly. Yeah. But he did, and he found love, and he started a new family. And somehow people want to attack him for that and find some sort of fault. I'm seeing a lot of inner projection from a lot of people of why they hate men or they hate women or they hate their ex-partner or whatever, because they were screwed over in some way, shape, or form, and somebody found happiness without them. And they want to sit in their corner and go after anybody who does that. It seems to be an MO for a lot of people. And we're seeing it in this case. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around this, but we see people do that in far less dramatic situations of, oh, well, there you go. They're happy, and they just have to constantly find a way to tear somebody else down and bring them to their own level of unhappiness. Is that what's going on in a lot of this case? Is it a lot of people who are already inherently unhappy, already have an issue with a member of the opposite sex or member of an ex, no matter what sex they are, and they're seeing that in this situation? And for some, even though it's not exactly the same, they're somehow seeing someone else finding happiness after a horrific tragedy, and that offends them because they were unable to achieve that themselves. That to me, I know it's a long, drawn out diatribe there, but that to me feels like kind of the heart of the issue that where a lot of people are coming here from with rage towards Patrick, because I don't see where it's founded in any other way.
Yeah, some. I mean, it's when you're dealing with human behavior and what the impetus is for people to take the actions they take, it's never just one thing. It's a broad swath. Because if you have 10 people, there's going to be really 10 different reasons. They can all kind of be rooted in the same thing, and that is our genetics, biology, and our own human behavior based on our own experiences, our life arc, and the things that traumatize us earlier in life. And that's to your point here. So say, and it's not going to be everyone. Some people are just outraged that they just want to get them because, like, you know, Bob was saying earlier, that they're just been determined from the beginning. You killed your kids. You should die. You should be locked away forever, and you should die. There's no excuse. And I get it. Absolutely. You know, and again, I'm on the side, lock her away too, because she's going to be locked away because, yeah, she's not safe, man. She's a nutter, you know, she's broken brain, but you can do so with an understanding about what caused it. And in these cases, a lot of these things, to your point, Tony, is that people have a personal experience, or they know someone had a personal experience that affected them. So they had their own wobble, an own deviation. And then we reflect, and then we identify what caused it. And we don't want it to happen again. We don't want it to happen ourselves again. We don't want it to happen to friends. Maybe especially if we're wound collectors, we have a victim mentality, then we're going to really lash out. If we're problem solvers, we might want to try to fix it another. See how it can be absolutely anyone that does this, because we now have our own context, our own experience from a situation, or we saw it third hand, or we saw it in some people just see it in something like a movie and they think they can do it. And now we're going to project that on others to allow ourselves. And why do people do this? We want to feel important. Because again, what's the driving motivator? Be valued, seen, and appreciated by others. And we think if we can be that one person that's listened to, I can join the tribe of people that say we can fix this, because I think this is the justice that needs to be done. This needs to be done here. And so it fulfills so many things. So if someone is in that much kind of pain, discontentment, or rage going on in their brain, there's not a lot of good big fours going, the serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin, and serotonin going firing in the brain. And so if this is the only thing they're getting through negative energy by projecting as others, they think that's going to solve the things they're not getting in their life. Again, a lot of information in there. A lot of broad swaths, but yes, some of it is definitely caused by that, but not all.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is. And it's, I mean, it feels like a lot of it, a lot of people are not necessarily on the side here of let's prevent this from happening again, or let's find solutions, or let's look at what's broken. It feels like it's more so they're on the mode of protecting their own bubble of their understanding of reality. And they don't want that bubble burst, because when you burst that bubble and you have to understand that psychosis is real, it is a thing that happens, that all these conditions are real and that they happen. I guess if you're living in a world where these things don't exist, or you just don't have to absorb them, it's a happier place. I don't know. I don't live in that land. I live in the land of reality, but I know a lot of people don't like that world. And I think sometimes being brought these stories, these cases that other people are living through, it shows them clear as day a contradiction to that bubble of reality. And it's too close to the sun. It's too scary to really absorb this. So the first thing I'm going to do is fight. It's a fight or flight. It's not absorb, it's fight or flight. And fight, then, when people are in that mode, when you're fighting, you go to sometimes unreasonable steps, unreasonable lengths to fight. I think that might be where the Patrick lashing out at is coming from here, where it's unreasonable. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. There's plenty of cases where I feel like conspiracy could be an element to the case. This is not one of them.
Yeah, there definitely are. I battled with you on a few of them.
yeah. I mean, exactly. But this, I don't know. Honest to God, I'm surprised that there's a conspiracy route to this case.
I mean, we covered this last couple of days too. I am and I'm not. I'm only because, again, when you have I think there's a lot of things in here on that conspiracy end of it, because it's easy with anything you want to prove, especially, so too many things in here. So first of all, yes, people are going to battle against their own self-identity, you know, from being challenged. And because a lot of people lock onto their self-identity, their morals, ethics, beliefs, their line of work, their title, position, all these things. And once you have that locked in, if anything challenges that self-identity, we're going to push back hard against it. And say you're a woman's advocate, if anything goes against that, you're going to go against that. Say you're anti this, anything you're going to challenge, you're going to go against that. So that's part of a lot of this. And then when you can cascade on top of that, as we've said with Patrick, everyone deals with trauma in certain ways. Everyone's a different kind of personality. When I see Patrick and Lindsay, their personalities together, to me, it's a yin and yang that makes a whole, because she's very different than he is. It's what can make a very good, healthy couple. All the data points we see surrounding them says good, healthy couple. But when you see a different affect in the courtroom between how Lindsay responded and he's responding, that might not sit right with you, because they should be united. He says he's united, but in other words, when words are incongruent with our visual cortex, we sometimes feel like something's off. I mean, one of our listeners yesterday, again, everyone's always picking up right wobbles and tremors. A lot of times we're inaccurate in what we're attributing it to. You're picking up on a wobble potentially in him from the words he's saying, that I stood by her side, I'm doing all these things. But when you see not the same emotional affect matching hers, you're like, something's off. Yeah, because it's not exactly the same hers, who's completely fallen apart in the courtroom. And so that then exasperates. All these data points keep coming in to say, I need to blame someone and burn someone at that stake for doing this. And I can't. And some of us, you know, some people saying it can't be her. Look at her. Oh, my God, look at her. It must be someone else. Look at him. He's different. Yeah.
It's like she did it. Nobody is arguing that. Yes. It's the mindset here that I see. Like, anyone that murders 3 babies is a danger to society and should be removed. Well, anyone that is medicated with that many meds over the course of 3 months is failed by the medical system that many times when they're trying to get help. I mean, is a victim of a system that has fucked with their brain more ways than their brain's already fucked with them themselves. So that's a big problem there. And I guess the thought is, and I think people are failing to see this or accept this, of let's just hope it doesn't happen to you. Let's just hope it doesn't happen to you with the comment there, that you don't have a grandchild, your own child, someone you care about, that their brain does this to them, or that they fall into this sort of state, because by that thinking, you should just off them too. Or would it be different if they sought help for months leading up to this horrible disaster, wrote about it, begged for help? Everything that she did trying to get the help that she so desperately desired, would you just tell your sister, your daughter, your granddaughter, your whoever, well, fuck her. She asked for all that help, but still she did it. So she's evil. That's the problem here. This is not a woman who sat there and just said, screw it. She's begging for help. It's so well documented. And so many people fail to understand or even absorb that point and understand it and go, oh, well, she knew something was wrong. She wanted help. She was begging for it. And this is how it happened. By putting up the wall and saying, screw it, burn her. We are saying screw you to every other person out there who falls into a mental illness or falls victim to the being prescribed incorrectly the cocktail of shit she was. And we're saying screw you. Screw you. No matter, though, that you tried to get that help, screw you. This happened over here. We don't want to hear about it. Screw them and screw you if it happens to you, too. That's what you're saying when someone, not you, Robin, but that's what the person is saying when they're like, fuck it. We don't want to hear anymore.
And on top of all that, to me, it still comes down to even simpler. She is. I just don't think enough people understand this isn't about her getting off.
No.
This is just where she's going to spend the rest of her life, in a psychiatric ward or in general pop. Either way, she is behind bars no matter what happens. That's the bottom line, because you're right. I agree. She should not be out in general population interacting with people right now. That is a very, very broken brain. Yeah. And look at all I keep saying to people, get curious. Research it. It's all out there. Research exactly what state hospital she would be in, what the conditions are there, and what's going to happen to her, how often she's evaluated, and the likelihood and probability she will ever, ever get out of jail. It's like this, if ever. And so that's what I'm saying is, like, I am not an advocate for letting her go. None of us are. It's not what the argument here is. The argument is that mental health failed, recognized in a psychosis because of all these failings. And as because they failed, she went into a psychotic break. Again, we'll find out when the jury decides, because that's who really matters in this one. And obviously advocating for the children, the loss of life, and fixing a system so it doesn't happen again. This is not about freeing Lindsay. She's not. I don't want her freed. She doesn't want to be. She wants to be dead. So that's why I really wish people would focus on that. Fix the effing system that completely failed the person who is doing her utmost to keep it going, to solve her problems. She was applying her same. I mean, again, the prosecution outlined it. This is a type A, hard charging mom of three, labor and delivery nurse that was trying to, desperately. And if you listen to her testimony, listen to her journals, all she wanted to do in life was be a mom, maybe even having a bigger family. And as she was facing her mental health crisis, she was applying that type A to solve the problem. She did not give up on a problem. She was trying to work the problem the best she could. And it failed. The system failed her. And she's accountable to it. She will be accountable to it no matter what the jury decides on this. And she will spend the rest of her life behind bars. Oh, my God. So I don't understand why there's an argument on this. It just,
or in a mental hospital. Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
It's behind bars. It's behind bars.
Well, it's because protecting someone's own bubble from reality supersedes getting out in front of this and trying to understand it and prevent it from happening to other people. I don't know. That seems to be the way a lot of brains operate. Yes. And why we are not that far off from 1693 today. We're just calling it something different. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in, and we'll continue our conversation right there. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Until next time, for Bob, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for The New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.